Support comes from Mosby Building Arts, trusted for remodeling projects big and small. Ideas at callmosby.com.
From the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom, this is The Gateway. It's Wednesday, November 26th. I'm Abby Larico. A trial that could determine whether St. Louis Sheriff Alfred Montgomery remains in office has come to a close.
The judge says he will weigh all of this evidence. He will weigh all of the things that the state brought up. He will weigh all the things that Montgomery's lawyers brought up. We just kind of have to sit back and wait.
St. Louis Public Radio's Chad Davis with a recap of the courtroom saga. Plus, the May tornado destroyed Centennial Christian Church. The pieces that remain will be demolished soon. Members hope the ministries will continue during the rebuilding process to help Fountain Park recover.
The church has had historic ministries, and so it'll be about reimagining those ministries in a new way as we redesign and rebuild.
St. Louis Public Radio's Andrea Henderson spoke with members about their memories of the church and their hopes going forward. Those stories coming up after this news on The Gateway. A federal judge in St. Louis is considering whether opponents of Missouri's new congressional map have the right to force the issue to go to voters as they gather signatures to put the new maps on the ballot. St. Louis Public Radio's Rachel Littman has more on yesterday's hearing.
The state last month sued the group leading the referendum effort. It argues that the U.S. Constitution gives state legislatures the sole power to draw maps. Any attempt to limit that power must be clearly outlined somewhere in the Missouri Constitution. The state's lawyers are asking U.S. District Judge Zachary Bluestone to stop the referendum process. Lawyers representing People versus Politicians say the state constitution is clear. Any law, absent a few exceptions that don't apply, is subject to the referendum process. They say their arguments are backed by a century of rulings from the U.S. Supreme Court. Bluestone has promised to rule before map opponents submit their signatures. That must happen by December 11th. I'm Rachel Lippman, St. Louis Public Radio.
Former St. Louis Mayor James Conway has died. The native St. Louisan led the city from 1977 to 1981, during which time the city consolidated its hospitals and boosted development downtown. He had previously served in the Missouri General Assembly and Senate and was a graduate of St. Louis University. Mayor Kara Spencer wrote of his passing in a social media post last night, saying Conway remained committed to improving St. Louis even after his time in office. That included serving as chair of the Zoo Museum District. His son, Steve Conway, represented the 8th Ward in the Board of Aldermen for nearly 30 years. James Conway was 93 years old. A St. Louis County Democrat says her constituents are unhappy that public money is going toward private school scholarships. St. Louis Public Radio's Jason Rosenbaum has more on whether that public investment could spur a political backlash.
Governor Mike Kehoe backed infusing $50 million into education savings accounts, which can be used to pay for private school scholarships. State Representative Jacqueline Zimmerman of Manchester says she was strongly opposed to this idea. The first-term Democratic lawmaker says private school assistance will ultimately hurt public schools.
I hope, if nothing else, we can reverse that track a little bit and try to prop them up and help out our public schools and make them the best that they can be.
Kehoe has said that he wants to revisit the foundation formula that provides state money to Missouri's public schools. I'm Jason Rosenbaum, St. Louis Public Radio.
Zimmerman was a guest on the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. Several state agencies say President Trump's tariff policies are costing Illinoisans thousands of dollars more this year. Mawa Iqbal reports.
Governor J.B. Pritzker earlier this summer directed the agencies to evaluate how the Trump administration's steep tariffs on countries like China and Canada are impacting Illinois' economic sectors. The Department of Employment Security found tariffs are costing the average Illinois household about $3,400 more this year, and unemployment claims are up 16%. Meanwhile, the Department of Public Health says hospitals on average will see expenses skyrocket. And food assistance and transit projects will be strained as tariffs continue to rise, the state says. In a statement, the governor's office says it will use these findings to, quote, guide mitigation efforts. I'm Mawa Iqbal.
The new hospital at Fort Leonard Wood will open in April of next year. The Army announced this week the new 400,000-square-foot facility will serve Armed Forces members stationed at the post, which is 30 miles west of Rolla, as well as their families and veterans in the area. It will replace the 60-year-old hospital currently at the base. Construction started in 2020 with a $400 million budget. It was originally slated to be finished last year, but there were delays. Earlier this year, reports surfaced that the new hospital was under consideration to be scaled back to a clinic. Since then, military officials have said the initial plans for the facility to include inpatient, outpatient, surgical, and other medical services would move forward. It's looking like a cold and wet Thanksgiving weekend in St. Louis. Holiday travelers can expect a mix of snow and rain for much of the St. Louis region. The National Weather Service reports the region has a 50% chance of seeing up to an inch of snow Friday evening heading into Saturday. Melissa Delia is a meteorologist for the National Weather Service in St. Louis.
Right now, especially in the St. Louis region, we're expecting ground and road temperatures to be pretty warm. And so, by and large, we're expecting accumulations to mainly occur on grassy elevated surfaces, even maybe some bridges and overpasses that are untreated.
The Quincy area could also get 2 inches or more of snow accumulation. Local radio listeners will be able to tune in to KDHX starting Monday, but not the community radio station that broadcast for nearly 40 years under that call sign before going off air this year. Instead, KDHX will be the new name of a conservative talk station. The owners of KXEN-AM bought the name last week. This is happening as the spot that the community station KDHX occupied on the dial, 88.1, will soon be replaced by Christian station Worship 1. Former KDHX DJ Keith Dudding says the changes have just been piling on.
So the fact that it will become a Christian station is enough. The fact that it was sold, bad enough. But to have the call letters appropriated by a conservative talk radio show is just like the final insult.
Former DJs from the community station plan to launch a new internet radio station in January. A trial that could oust St. Louis Sheriff Alfred Montgomery has come to a close. The Missouri Attorney General's office and Montgomery's lawyers presented their arguments for about a week. The state says any one of the 6 counts against the sheriff is enough to remove him from the job. St. Louis Public Radio's Chad Davis sat down with STLPR editor Jonathan All to recap the trial and share where things go from here.
Chad, what happened during the trial and what were the arguments that each side made?
So there are 6 counts against the sheriff that the state is using to try to oust him. So some of them are talking about some of the misused funds that they've alleged. They're also saying that the sheriff didn't have a right to or shouldn't have had a coworker drive some of his kids to and from school. There are other allegations as well against the sheriff regarding then jail commissioner Tammy Ross, and also someone that the sheriff's office alleged was impersonating a sheriff's deputy outside of a gas station who was providing security. So on some of those counts, they had people who testified who had said that, especially with the jail commissioner, they had thought that it was wrong that she was handcuffed. Then there was also an argument from Montgomery's side that said that she had consented to it. Some people testified saying that they had heard her say, okay, well, then just cuff me then. And then also they were saying that the sheriff's office had a right to actually detain her. So the state is arguing that this went outside the scope of a sheriff's office, that they actually did not have the ability or the power to do such a thing. And the sheriff's office is arguing, well, actually, we did have the power to do these things, that some of these were internal investigations, that we had the right to do something like that.
Can you describe what the mood was like in court, and were there any hiccups during the trial?
So the first hiccup actually happened the first day of the trial, or what we thought was the first day of the trial. Montgomery actually was not there because he was still being detained. So he's actually being detained on a separate trial, for a separate trial, which is a federal case. And he was there Wednesday onward. The judge even said, you know, he thinks that in order to have a fair trial, Montgomery had to be present. Montgomery had to talk with, counsel that was only right. And so there was a little bit of an issue right there with the federal situation.
You mentioned the federal case. It's still pending against Montgomery for his actions. Did this state trial have anything to do with the federal one?
One of the last or final charges that the state brought up against Montgomery was involving the federal trial, where they said because he is in jail involving the federal trial, he should not be sheriff. And it's an argument that Montgomery's lawyers really were arguing against. They were saying that, well, he still has access to communications. He still has access to talking with people in his staff. He can send text messages. He has a phone. He has a tablet. He has various communications to actually speak with those people who are in the sheriff's office. And then you had people who are in the state's office, or the state attorneys general, rather. They were saying, well, you know, this is an in-person job. This is not a virtual job. This is not a job where you can be so far away, an hour away or so from the actual office to conduct business. And so their argument was that, no, he should not be able to stay in office and that he should be removed.
What happens next?
Now it's up to the judge. The judge says he will weigh all of this evidence. He will weigh all of the things that the state brought up. He will weigh all the things that Montgomery's lawyers brought up. He didn't really give a time frame for when a decision will be ruled, but he did say he wants to make it. He wants to make a timely decision. We have no idea what that means, though, so we just kind of have to sit back and wait.
Chad Davis, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
That was St. Louis Public Radio's Chad Davis and Jonathan All talking about the St. Louis Sheriff's trial. You can read more about the case and the arguments each side made at stlpr.org. Conversation and coverage edited by Jessica Rogan. Centennial Christian Church in Fountain Park plans to say goodbye to its building in the next few weeks. It's one of the worship centers in North St. Louis that was destroyed by the May tornado. Church leaders held a memorial service Sunday to grieve the loss and mourn one of its members who died inside the church during the storm. As St. Louis Public Radio's Andrea Henderson reports, members plan to carry Centennial's legacy forward through its ministries.
On a cold and quiet Sunday afternoon, Fountain Park neighbors and Centennial Christian Church members and friends gathered in the parking lot behind the church to memorialize what's left of the tornado-stricken building. As people found their seats, smiles could be seen throughout the crowd, but many faces were somber until the glorious sounds of a few church members began to sing. Prayers and words of encouragement were offered from local pastors, city officials, and one of the oldest members of the church. Centennial's transitional pastor, Reverend Dietra Wise Baker, reminded the crowd that it's necessary to reflect on the good memories, but it's time for change.
Today is a hard day, church. We say farewell to a building that has hosted weddings and baby dedications and funerals and ordinations and countless ministries and memories that we hold sacred.
Centennial was founded by five women in 1904. It moved around the city for a few decades and found its home at 4950 Fountain Avenue in 1945. Over the years, people came to the place of worship seeking food, refuge, financial support, health care, and crisis assistance. Members hope these services continue even without the building. Samuel Hilton came to the church in 1961 at the age of four. His father was Centennial's pastor for over 30 years. Hilton is still processing the church's destruction, but is looking forward to a new beginning.
I don't want to see this building just like an open, vacant ground. You see, I want something, be something that's going to give God glory, that's going to help this dying community.
Longtime member Cheryl Jackson was inside the church when the floor collapsed and the roof caved in, trapping her and two others inside, including Patricia Pendleton, who died in the church. Jackson hopes Centennial continues the food ministry that was so important to Pendleton to keep her name alive. Jackson also wants to keep the health ministry going.
You know, like a lot of the people are medically underserved and uninsured, and we're going to try to put something in to either connect to fairly qualified health centers or do some screenings there.
Pendleton's husband, Harry, is keeping his wife's spirit alive by continuing to provide food to the neighborhood through the church and its community partners.
With my wife and I kind of started was in 2020. We started to serve food because we knew kids were going to be out of when the COVID hit and they weren't going to have anything to eat. So we started serving lunches right from our back gate.
While Centennial's rich ministries continue in the area, services have since moved to Florissant Valley Christian Church. Wise Baker said demolition is expected to begin sometime next month.
Once we get the building down, we'll go into the design phase. But the church has had historic ministries, and so it'll be about reimagining those ministries in a new way.
Wise Baker encourages the community and church members to remain resilient.
This isn't the first time we face tragedy in our community. We have a lot to rebuild. This is an opportunity for not just our church, but the community to understand who we are.
When Centennial comes down, church members pray that its history, music, ministries, and memories will linger on throughout the community for generations.
I don't feel no waste time.
In Fountain Park, I'm Andrea Henderson, St. Louis Public Radio.
From where I started from.
How Brian Moline edited that piece. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis. Music by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. I'm Abby Larico. I'm thankful for you this holiday season, for listening to this podcast every day, and for engaging with the news in your community. Thank you. Have a safe and happy Thanksgiving weekend. We'll be off for the next few days, but The Gateway will be back in your podcast feeds Monday.